This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards.
Thanks for the memory of sentimental verse. Nothing in my purse. And chuckles when the preacher said...
Bob Hope has died. He was 100 years old. Born Leslie Hope in England, the fifth of seven sons, he grew up in Cleveland. In vaudeville, radio, television, the movies, and with the USO, Hope left his mark across the world and across the generations. He was the face of the Academy Awards, and by extension, the face of Hollywood. He could sing, dance, and tell a few jokes. He died last night with his family by his bedside at his home in Toluca Lake, California. The cause of death was pneumonia. Pat Dowell has this appreciation.
Bob Hope's trademark was the monologue. In the 1920s, when his vaudeville act fell on hard times, Hope went solo and found he could make people laugh by standing up on stage and telling jokes, something that he continued to do on radio in the early 1930s. He reached his widest radio audience starting in 1938 with the Pepsodent Show.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob Hollywood Canteen Hope. Telling you soldiers to use Pepsodent whether your mouth has a lot or a few, and even though your toothbrush may be GI, your teeth will never be PU.
For Hope, the monologue was the most important part of his show. He hired teams of writers to come up with dozens of jokes for each show.
And they've certainly got an efficient way of moving the troops from one place to another down here. In San Francisco, they use trains. In Seattle, they use flying fortresses. Down here, they just sent out a girl in slacks. But...
One of the writers who helped craft Bob Hope's monologues was Larry Gelbart, who wrote for Hope from 1948 to 1952 and went on to create the television series MASH. Gelbart says Hope owed his success to the way he delivered jokes.
Bob had a kind of a machine gun delivery. The jokes just kept sort of being sprayed at the audience. It was a machine gun-like delivery as opposed to, say, the more subtle or more graceful Jack Benny kind of delivery. Bob, you know, just nailed you. He was going to get you. If he didn't get you with the first joke, he'd get you with the 25th one, you know. Bob Hope was the Jimmy Cagney of comedy.
Hope became a movie star, too, when he teamed up with singer Bing Crosby in 1940 for the first of seven road movies. They typically played down-and-out vaudevillians, headed nowhere fast, and, as in The Road to Morocco, bickering all the way.
Look at us, chewing a wrap, sunny side up. I'll tell you how to get home, you said. We'll stow away, you said. No, sir, I said. Don't be a sap, you said. No, sir, I said. We're stowing away, and that's that, you said. No, sir, I said.
Yak-a-yak-a-yak. What a brilliant conversationalist you are.
I took one look at that crate, and I knew it would blow up in our faces.
Wait till they find out who was smoking in the powder room.
It was war, not that comedy, that made Bob Hope an American institution. 6 months before the attack on Pearl Harbor, he was enjoying the success of the Pepsodent Show when he was asked to take the cast to an Army base outside Los Angeles, as he recalled in a 1983 NPR interview.
It started in 1941 when our producer of the radio show, this before television, the producer of the radio show asked us to go to March Field. And I said, why? We're doing fine here at Sunset and Vine on the radio. But he talked us into going, and we all got on the bus and went down there. And the audience was so fantastic that we decided to keep doing it. We did next week in Camp Pendleton, then we went to San Diego, then Camp Roberts. Then, of course, in December, the war broke out. Then you felt like you were really doing something, you know?
One of the young servicemen laughing at Hope's jokes was Bob Stump. He remembers being 15 and seeing Hope at Pearl Harbor late in the war. For Stump, it was almost like listening to Hope on the radio.
Typical, you know, from the very first till the very last, the same kind of jokes, I guess. Maybe some of the same jokes, in fact. I don't remember that, but I can just remember how much we enjoyed it. You know, you're away from home for long stretches, you appreciate that type of thing.
Stump became a congressman from Arizona and introduced a bill that made Bob Hope an honorary member of the armed forces in 1997. Stump also earned a bit of notoriety in 1998 for reading on the floor of Congress a prematurely released wire story announcing Hope's death. Bob Hope made his last trip to the front during the Persian Gulf War. Writer Larry Gelbart went to Korea with the comedian.
It's pretty amazing to stand on whatever substituted for backstage and to look out at maybe 50,000 troops squatting, sitting in trees, as far as the eye could see, all of them with ammunition in their guns, possibly between battles, sitting there and just laughing and enjoying this most American of comedians, certainly the most American for an Englishman, of comedians, and this touch of home, and this compliment to them that he went there for the express purpose of entertaining them.
Gelbart says that working with Bob Hope taught him that he could write comedy under any conditions, on a cargo plane or poolside. Hope's influence on comics, he says, can be seen nightly when Jay Leno and David Letterman get up to do their monologues. Hope did not invent the monologue, Gelbart points out, or any other comic form.
No, he didn't invent any form. He just was a great practitioner of an existent form, which probably goes back to court jesters. Only he became the king later on in life.
Bob Hope's reign took on a tinge of controversy during the Vietnam War when the comedian openly supported the war, taking a rare political stand. But his fame never dwindled, and his joke files continued to grow. They reside in the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. now, and can be searched by subject, all 85,000 pages of them, in the Bob Hope Gallery of American Entertainment. For NPR News, this is Pat Dowell in Washington.